evening, as the case may be. And welcome, I'm Steve Metallitz, and with me is Bo Brendler, and we are the coordinators of the Registrar Accreditation Agreement drafting team. And what we hope to do this afternoon is to kind of bring everybody up to date on what the team is doing, get some further input on our activities, and invite you to participate and talk about the next steps. Let me provide a little background first. This whole effort arises out of a resolution that the GNSO Council approved at the Mexico City meeting. At that time, it approved a pending set of amendments to the Registrar Accreditation Agreement, but it had it did so on the condition that some other things would follow, and basically that was the genesis of this drafting team. So after the council recommended the amendments, there was actually some delay, and finally the board of directors approved the RAA amendments in May 2009. The concern had been that a couple of things that many people within the GNSO Council wanted to see included or fleshed out more in the RAA amendments from earlier this year were not included, so this follow-on activity was mandated in the GNSO Council resolution. So after a few other detours, which we don't really need to pursue at this point, in September of 2009, the Council approved the charter of this drafting team and basically carried forward with some development the tasks that had been decided on back in March, which were twofold: first, to develop a registrant rights charter, and then identify topics on which further amendments to the Registrar Accreditation Agreement might be desirable. And there you have the working group charter, which again breaks down into the Team A and Team B. First, on the descriptive list of rights and registrants drawn from the current version of the RAA and using a draft that the staff had generated as a starting point. And then for Team B, and Bo is the coordinator of Team A, and I'm the coordinator of Team B, which has three tasks. First, identifying the topics for possible further amendments to the RAA, flagging any topics that may require some further analysis as to whether they will impact on consensus policy, and then third, propose the next steps going forward. So I think we're actually going to start with Team B and then go to Team A. On Team B, as you saw in the previous slide, we have three jobs, and we're really just working on the first one, which is to develop this list of topics, something that we see as kind of a cumulative exercise, try to get all the topics that we can on the table. I think we're going to have some presentations today from a couple of people who will be sources of those topics, if you will. Bobby Flame from the Federal Bureau of Investigation, relating some concerns from the law enforcement community, and then Dave Giza from the ICANN contract compliance team, who will be talking about some suggested topics that the ICANN staff has developed and will be contributing to this process. And then, of course, we're soliciting additional topics. I know my constituency, the intellectual property constituency, is working on some possible topics. And what we hope to do is get as much of this onto the pile of topics by November 9th, then we'll proceed to try to weed out duplicates, and basically that will help us complete our first task of identifying the topics. And as you saw on the slide, we have other tasks going forward. I should have mentioned, by the way, that before we get on to A, is that this is also a joint activity with the At-Large Advisory Committee, particularly with regard to sub-team A, and that was part of the direction of the council resolution, if you read the full text of the resolution. And, of course, we're welcoming suggestions from ALAC as far as the sub-team B tasks as well. So I want to make sure that that's clear to everybody. Then let's go to – oh, did you want to talk a little bit about
–
Okay.
So I have actually, I think, a little bit easier job in the sense that there has been a bit of work done on the Registrant Rights Charter. This is just the applicable language in the RIA, Section 3.5, that says in the event that ICANN gives reasonable notice to registrar that ICANN has published a web page that identifies available registrant rights. And you can read the rest of that text there. Registrar shall provide a link to the web page. So part of what we're going to talk about after we go through some of the material from Team B here is some documents that I sent around earlier today. And those of you who haven't joined the Team A or Team B mailing lists, let us know after this so that we can send you the documents. But just some documents to help us think through the process of trying to create something that will be useful both to the community here, but also that will be able to be read and used by consumers and users and the people who are affected a great deal by what's going to be here. So we'll come back to this after the discussion of Team B. Still Team A. Oh, that's okay. So we'll just. All right.
There it is. Okay. So I think since we're starting going in reverse alphabetical order here, we'll start with Team B. And I think we had Bobby listed as presenting. I don't know if you have any. Do you have any slides or anything? You're just going to.
No, I'll just talk.
Well, let me turn it over to Bobby then for a presentation of some of the topics that law enforcement would like to propose.
Okay. My name is Bobby Flem. I work with the FBI in the United States. Just so you know, I also have some of my other law enforcement colleagues here from around the world. I have Paul Hoare and Richard Hyams from Osaka, which is in the United Kingdom, and I also have Adrian Koster from Switzerland, and we also have the Korean National Police here, and also the Thai National Police, or the Thai Department of Justice. We have been working and discussing, and we drafted our own set of RIA amendments, which we actually formally presented to the GAC yesterday. And we have done that in conjunction with law enforcement internationally. We actually drafted these recommendations. It was the Australian Federal Police, the New Zealand Federal Police, UK SOCA, the FBI, and also RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And although we drafted it, it has been supported by the G8 and also the Interpol Working Group, Cyber Working Group. We've also gotten support from Korea and Thailand. A few other countries are looking at it and making sure that they approve of it, too, in other parts of the world, such as South Africa. So with that being said, we drafted these RIA amendments or our proposals after consultation with registrars, registries. We also spoke with David Giese and Stacey Burnett from ICANN Contractual Compliance. We also spoke to other industry security people as well, just to make sure that we had a reality check and that we weren't going off the deep end. And for the most part, we're pretty much all in agreement on certain things. Some things, I will be honest with you, that with registrars and then some of the registries and so on and so forth, we just had to agree to disagree. And that's just the way it is. And, you know, that's, well, you know, we'll just have to see how we proceed. But we did two things. Number one, based on some of the advice from ICANN staff, we came up with a short list, which we could present. It's a one-page summary of what we would like in general, principles. And then we have a long list that is a little bit more detailed. The short list consists of three principles, and the first one is due diligence. Due diligence insofar as ICANN accrediting registrars and registries, which we're not here for that. But more importantly, what concerns us in the RIA is due diligence where the registrars would validate the information that they're getting from the registrants. So that is something that we would like to see, obviously, in the RIA, in which we specified, and I can go into that. The second issue is the maintenance of the who is and public and accurate, which also goes to the RIA. And the third is the transparency of the RIA and making sure that all third-party beneficiaries and signatories and so on and so forth, such as resellers, are incorporated and held legally liable. So with that being said, some of the things that we had put or recommended, concerned the proxy registrations. While we personally don't condone them, we realize it's kind of reality, and we even have disagreements among law enforcement on how that should be handled. But we believe that if there's proxy registrations and services and so on and so forth, that ICANN should make sure that they're from an accredited proxy registration, and also that all that information that is being gathered should be accurate. Another thing that we would like to be considered is in the paragraph 5.3.2.1, language should be added to the effect of knowingly and or through gross negligent permit criminal activity in the registration of domain names or provision of domain name who is information. Some CCTLDs already have incorporated this into their own contracts and laws in their respective country. I know Spain has done that. Switzerland is currently considering that. UK, I'm not quite sure. I know they have some laws, but I'm not 100% positive. Another thing that we would like to see in the RIA is to make sure, like we said, there's transparency, which means we know where all the companies are, who owns what. Everything is above board. We know if one registrar is owned by another, that's self-evident. Also, we would want to make sure, and we grabbed some of this information from the Anti-Phishing Working Group, and Rod Rasmussen is here, some of the information that could be collected and make sure that that is invalidated as well. And I think that is it. And, what I'll do is I also will present this to the working group so that they will have it as well. But our basic issue is we just want to make sure that the RIA is a document which has some teeth, and if there's any criminal behavior by anyone, that the appropriate parties, whether it be ICANN or the registrar, has the appropriate means to enforce laws or allow law enforcement to be able to find an improper actor or at least begin the process. So with that being said, I will end and defer back to you.
Thanks very much, Bobby, and we look forward to getting your detailed written recommendations. Let me see if there are any questions for Bobby at this point. I see a couple down there. Elliot, or Tim, I guess, had his hand up first. And please just state who you are.
Tim Ruiz with GoDaddy, with the registrar's constituency, stakeholders group. One of those. Hey, it's new yet, you know. And not really a question for Bobby. I appreciate your sharing that information, but just I was thinking back. As we compile this list of topics, Steve, is the idea that we would compile the list and then at that point then look at, well, well, here's the things that could be changed through consensus policy versus those that do actually require an RIA amendment to get accomplished. Is that?
Yeah, I think that's basically right. We have to at least try to identify which ones raise those issues. We may not be in a position to definitively resolve where they fall.
Bobby, one of the things that you and I have talked about in the past, and that I think I'm sort of concerned about with that list is that we seem to have, and I say we because we both have the problem. We seem to have the bulk of our problems outside of jurisdiction. And, so all of this is well and good, but, it seems like we're just touching a tiny little piece of the problem. So, are we kind of swatting a fly with a sledgehammer here, and not really addressing our real joint issues?
No, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, and I know we discussed this earlier. We actually, myself and Elliot, met in Calistoga not too long ago, and we discussed some of this. I believe that certainly there is outside jurisdictional issues, and I think what you're referring to is countries in which we're not able to get the perpetrators. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, that's right, because, right.
the big, I mean, I think the easy stuff is the stuff that's in jurisdiction. I mean, you know, it's.
Well, I agree with you there. There's certainly places that it's more difficult to enforce the law, even when the laws are in place. But I also strongly believe that if we can cut out, or not cut out, but if we can make sure that data is validated and that there's a way to make sure that whatever is being reported to the registrars is accurate, we would cut a lot out on phishing, obviously, fast flux, double flux, and a lot of other things that it's almost a low-hanging fruit.
So I'm struggling with it a little. You know, one of the things that you were great at educating me about was how so much bad behavior has migrated to ccTLDs. And, you know, again, ccTLDs in some of the more obscure locations. Could you walk me through, and I understand that, you know, if we were ever to get there, there would, I'm sure, be, you know, rooms two and three times this size filled with people negotiating in excruciating detail. But, you know, what, just from your perspective, what a good data validation exercise would look like? Like, kind of walk me through it as a as an end user. You know, you be the registrant, and what would you experience?
Okay, if you're asking for something technical,
no, not at all. I want it very lay. You know, Bobby's at home in front of the computer. He decides to register a domain name. What does he experience?
Well, what I've seen from certain registrars is that what they do to validate the data, they are cross-referencing an IP address to make sure it's a valid one. They're cross-referencing to make sure the IP address matches the time zone, matches a MAC address, matches a physical address, things of that nature. So where you're creating kind of an algorithm, if you will, where that information is correct. Now, that being said, can an IP address truly be traced, and can it be, you know, will it be foolproof? No. And if you're dealing with a real criminal who's going to use proxy servers and the like, no. But the idea is, you know, you still have to do something. To do nothing is not a solution. There has to be some way to validate that. So that being said, that is what I would do. If I'm sitting at home, I would make sure that, you know, is that credit card valid? Are there lists you're checking against to make sure that that's not on a stolen credit card list? Is that... does it make sense that an IP address, you know, looks like it's coming from Indonesia, yet it says, you know, Chicago, Illinois? You know, would I also notice if there was, you know, batch registrations or things of that nature? So that's what I'm referring to, and that's how I would do it. And also with the ccTLDs, I said some of that has migrated, but I don't think the bulk of it, obviously, is in the ccTLDs.
Bobby, it's interesting that you went into the details of that, but surely that's completely outside the remit of the RAA. It's more a case of PCI compliance and checking on credit card data.
Well, I think that has to be part of it insofar as you're creating a standard by which people are adhering to insofar as a minimum standard. So part of that, checking credit cards, I think, if, you know, with the RAA, I think it should be something that would be, I don't know if, I'm trying to think, you know, where it would go in, but it's maybe not necessarily an RAA practice, but something that should be a practice or a business standard, if you will, and if it doesn't fit in the RAA, then that's where it would fit.
Well, if I could just add on that, I mean, I'm not sure about what's within the remit of the RAA is actually what's on the table here. What should be in the RAA, or what topics should be addressed in the RAA. So the RAA has some requirements for registrant contact data that should be made available, for example, and I think what some of what Bobby is suggesting is what should be done to validate that data. So it falls within the, you know, the general scope. I'm not prejudging whether, you know, it should go in an amendment to the RAA, but I think that's kind of where it fits into the discussion we're having. Any other questions for Bobby? Okay, if not, let me turn this over to Dave Giza from the ICANN contract compliance team for some of the suggestions that will be coming into this process from ICANN staff.
Thank you, Steve. Looking around the room, I think I know just about everybody. So let me tell you, sort of starting out with the standard, disclaimer, that the suggestions that are compiled here have been compiled through a collaborative and working group effort from ICANN staff. And so contractual compliance was asked to sort of lead that initiative. And I want to give you a little history before I give you some of the topics that the working group may choose to discuss and debate. And so for over 3 months, various teams inside of ICANN, met on a fairly regular basis to review, first and foremost, the amendments to the 2009 amendments to the REA. And I think there was general agreement among our team that, the 2009 version of the REA, really went a long way towards, making substantial progress in improving, many of the enforcement-related as well as some of the policy-related issues that had not been addressed in the 2001 version of the REA. And so I think we all recognize that, that there was a lot of hard work that went into the 2009 version. And I will tell you from a contractual compliance standpoint that we have a lot of hard work ahead of us to actually begin to use the new tools in our toolbox that resulted from the amendments, in 2009. And so then as we formed our working team and began to discuss this topic, we essentially agreed that the best way to present these topics to this working group was to do it in the following fashion. And the topics were divided into two categories. The first category would be potential amendments, to the REA to clarify, existing provisions in the document. I think Steve Metallitz noted that in the discussions that were held that resulted in the 2009 amendments to the agreement, there were still open issues or questions that for various reasons, were not addressed or could not be addressed. And so staff thought that the good way to bring those topics to this working group was under this category of clarifying existing REA obligations. And in that category, there were at least a handful of ideas that we want to share with this working group. And then many of you, I think, know, based on the email from Doug Brent, our COO, that there's a document that we've prepared, and I have it here. It's essentially called our staff notes document. And it's a document that, we want to officially release so that this working group and others can see that document and determine, how useful that document will be to this group as you do your work. And so in this first category that I'm referring to, I'll just give you the topics, and I won't really go into a deep dive or analysis on the topic unless there are others who would prefer to do so. But clearly, who has inaccuracy claims was an area where we felt that topic could be addressed by the working group. And in particular, we thought that there might be an opportunity to consider, future validation or verification requirements that would be consistent with the language in the document today. And I'll just read from this document for a moment here to give you an idea of what that means. And so this working group might want to consider additional terms in the REA that require taking reasonable steps to, quote-unquote, verify the register name holder who is data when inaccuracies are detected. Now what does that mean? We don't honestly know, and we think the working group here would have to struggle with that to determine what processes would be reasonable in order to verify a registered name holder who is data. For many of you who sat through the last hour and a half in our Who Is Accuracy workshop, that we all struggled through this concept, and we've worked diligently to try and define baseline inaccuracies and who is based on a valid name and postal address, but we know there's a lot of work to do here. And so this working group, may want to consider what level of verification of who is data would be appropriate and how you would accomplish that. And so that's an idea that's being posited by ICANN staff for the group to consider. We also think that there's an opportunity to do an examination of ICANN registered name holder data. And so, again, you might ask the question, well, what does that mean? And, again, I'll just read from the paper because I think that'll be most instructive. You know, here we're thinking that if you look at Section 3.4.3 of the RAA, this group may want to consider a potential requirement to produce and send copies of records directly to ICANN when those records are requested. That might seem rather fundamental to you, but under the existing RAA, there's no requirement that registrars actually produce, copy, and send those records to us electronically or the old-fashioned way through paper. We largely have to discuss, negotiate, and make arrangements to request those records under a different set of circumstances. So, again, a clarification of the document that we think would be very useful. If you move on to the next recommendation here, it has to do with essentially business dealings with registered name holders. And here, we think there's a really good opportunity for this group to think through a provision in Section 3773 that talks about prompt disclosure. And I've had this discussion with my IPC colleagues, my registrar colleagues, my registry colleagues, and even law enforcement. And here we've often talked about, you know, what does it mean to promptly disclose the current contact information provided by a licensee under this provision of the RAA? And the word promptly seems to be debated, you know, far too often. And so there's been a consideration among the ICANN staff that perhaps that word promptly can actually be changed to within 5 business days. And whether that time frame is, you know, makes sense for those who engage in this business is a topic to be discussed, largely by those who represent privacy and proxy registration services and registrars, and determine if that 5 business day requirement is a better solution than the term promptly. Next recommendation comes along in the category of Section 4.3.1, which is a relatively...
David, can I jump in on that?
Oh, sure.
3773 is, I think it's important, and I'd like to, you know, I'm not going to be on the team. Life's too short, and I think you'll all do a fantastic job. You know, that is a section in particular, this section and that portion of this section in particular is one that I just got finished defending and winning a completely frivolous lawsuit that still managed to cost me, you know, a good mid-5-figure sum, you know, to be dismissed summarily because of the third-party beneficiary issues. And, you know, specifically, you know, poking at, let me be specific in what I'd put to the group. You know, it would be great if we could make sure that any drafting around this section is very tight around a couple concepts. Certainly no third-party beneficiaries, which so far has resisted being attacked, but we have to make sure that nothing touches that and that it's very explicit. And the second, that section talks about when presented with reasonable evidence.
Right.
And that is a section that I'd like to see fleshed out more fully, because I can assure you that anybody who you know, presents us with the slightest shred feels that in their situation it's reasonable. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we need to make sure that this is, you know, that we can respond extremely promptly when Bobby needs us, but not have to jump and be at the beck and call of, you know, everybody who feels offended by a website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Elliot, that's a great point. And I do think there's an opportunity to clarify terms, you know, so that it's clear what's meant when someone says that, you know, they're presenting reasonable evidence of, you know, of actionable harm. And quite frankly, the contractual compliance team has considered producing advisories with respect to Section 3773, and so we've solicited input from, you know, from other stakeholders and have begun the process of drafting some advisories that I think could be useful to the working group as they look at these issues and then decide, you know, what action they want to recommend going forward. You know, perhaps the advisories will solve the problem or topics, or perhaps it's just simply an issue that needs to be addressed through an amendment in the language in order to clarify it. I do know that lay people struggle reading the registrar accreditation agreement and reading the registry operators agreement, and so, you know, there's been a call for plain language and clarity in terms of how these agreements are further amended and deployed throughout the community. And so that may be another opportunity for this working group.
You're talking about lay people, and
right.
I'm talking about
right.
Litigious lawyers who mm-hmm. really just want to take a shot.
Yeah, and
they are happy to construe it to their benefit.
Yeah, understood. And so, again, this is, again, a potential topic for this working group to consider. With regard to this next topic, policy pointed out that there were some revisions and specifications with regard to consensus policies that would require a GNSO council supermajority vote instead of a two-thirds vote of the council, and that's a technical clarification under Section 4.3.1 of the RAA, but that I think will tie nicely into the changes that were recently adopted by the GNSO Council, and quite frankly, policy could, you know, provide more input, direction, and guidance on that particular provision. In chatting with the registrar liaison team, Tim Cole and others pointed out to us that the current insurance requirements in the RAA may again need to change in order to make sure that registrars are requiring essentially the correct and coverage that would provide, let's say, protection for domain name holders who might suffer some form of damage or loss caused by a registrar's wrongful or intentional acts. In the commercial world, you might think of that as like errors and omissions coverage. In the registrar world, it may be considered as something different. And so we weren't certain about what type of coverage would be appropriate, and so it was suggested that this working group have that discussion with registrars and others to determine, quite frankly, if the insurance coverage that is required under the RAA is, in fact, sufficient or not for purposes of protecting registrants from that kind of intentional or willful behavior. Arbitration. In consulting with our staff and legal team, we felt that this group should consider potentially amending the RAA to reduce the number of arbitrators in a UDRP process from 3 to 1. It seems that legal has suggested to us that that number might be better addressed through one arbitrator as opposed to a panel of 3. I leave that to the discussion of, you know, for this team to decide if that's, you know, a type of recommendation or not that, you know, ought to be considered.
Excuse me, that came from ICANN Legal?
Yeah, it was feedback from legal, yeah. But again, all of these are collective comments from staff, so I don't want to single legal out, but on this particular question, legal took the lead role.
What was the rationale for that?
The fact that
respondents are too successful in three-man panels?
No, I don't think that's the case.
So what was it?
I don't know the rationale behind the request to move from 3 to 1. I can find out for you and provide that
please
answer.
Please get back to me on that.
Can I clarify? It's not the UDRP. It's the arbitration provisions in the contract. So, you know, if there's a dispute between
the
registrar.
Sorry, you said UDRP.
Yeah. I understand. That's why I just wanted to clarify. It has nothing to do with the UDRP.
Important clarification.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Marjorie. I appreciate that. It's been a long day. Okay. Next, there were some other minor technical changes to this Section 5.6 of the RAA with respect to some of the provisions that apply to the arbitration process, and you'll find those in the staff paper here. Again, minor clarifying points. And then the last topic under clarification of existing RAA obligations was administration of contracts. And here, we think that there may be some opportunities to streamline the procedure for adding accreditation and additional TLDs. And some of the potential ways in which that might be considered by this working group is through the trademark-related license terms, which could be incorporated in a separate section within the body of the REA, thereby eliminating the need for a separate appendix to the document. Again, an administrative detail that could be handled most likely through an amendment and not through a policy provision. So for those handful of comments, clearly those were directed to, you know, clarifying existing provisions. I think the more, you know, interesting, controversial, and, you know, topics to be debated and discussed in the working group, you know, come, you know, through this next category that we identified as potential new REA obligations that could address internet community concerns about the DNS. And in this area, there were four particular topics that ICANN staff identified as topics that ought to be considered by this group. The first topic involves cyber squatting. And as many of you know, cyber squatting is an issue that has, you know, enormous notoriety in the United States under current U.S. laws. And there's cyber squatting as it occurs outside of the U.S., although not always subject to U.S. laws or U.S. jurisdiction, appears to be a topic of concern. There are certainly more lawsuits that have been filed recently with respect to cyber squatting, and there are certain members of our community who diligently watch and observe incidents of cyber squatting and tend to report them not only to law enforcement, but they report them to ICANN staff as well. And so we thought that, you know, because of the feedback that we've received from the community, that, you know, clearly the working group ought to consider the topic of cyber squatting, particularly as it applies to registrars, and whether or not the working group, you know, should, you know, just create with either through policy or through an amendment, you know, an outright prohibition of registrar cyber squatting. And again, that's we think a topic that, you know, this group needs to discuss. It's going to be highly debated and probably quite heatedly resolved if at all in this working group. But it's a topic that, again, given the feedback and information that staff has received, and that's not just the contractual compliance team, it's a topic that we think this group should consider. The next topic is no surprise. Can I get through the topics and then you want to comment
just
now?
Just one thing that concerns me, David, is just some of the characterizations like this is going to be heatedly debated. We're not going to be negotiating, you know, the actual amendments within this working group. So I just want to make sure that that's clear and that
I think that's
everyone doesn't have a misunderstanding about what's going to
occur. At this point, we're amassing a list of topics.
And I hope we can discuss a lot of these things without getting heated. But so just concerned about some of the characterizations, if you could cool
that. Fair comment. And I apologize if that's a mischaracterization of the discussion that's going to occur here in the working group.
We always remain very cool in our discussion.
That's good. That's good. The second topic, malicious conduct involving the DNS. And as the ICANN staff looked at the 2009 version of the RAA, we collectively believe there's an opportunity to look at establishing a duty, perhaps, for registrars to investigate and report back to ICANN on, you know, what actions registrars have taken in response to reports received, you know, from third parties that actually demonstrate or have evidence of illegal malicious conduct involving domain names. And again, the thinking here was that, you know, registrars are doing things today in this regard, and perhaps having a contractual commitment or obligation to actually report back on what they're doing would be one way for ICANN to begin establishing sort of a clearinghouse for this information, so that when we receive consumer complaints, we're in a position to actually respond back with data from registrars who have received, again, you know, complaints alleging malicious conduct, and have actually taken action with respect to that, and we would know that if there was a provision in the agreement requiring registrars to not only investigate and report, but also report back to ICANN. Third topic under this category, it involves privacy proxy services and resellers. And here we looked at different sections inside the RAA, RAA Section 3.4.1 and RAA Section 3773. And so with respect to RAA 3, RA section 3.4.1, we thought that, again, this group would want to discuss and decide what additional privacy proxy data escrow provisions, you know, would be appropriate for resellers with respect to their privacy and proxy-related clients. And here, the recommendations were a bit more precise, and I don't think you'd want me to read them into the record, but you'll all have a chance to see the document and, you know, and determine if that is a topic that, you know, should be on the short list going forward. With regard to the second topic, this one's a bit more challenging, and that has to do with Section 3773 again. And in here, it's an issue involving the registered name holder. And in this section, perhaps there would be a discussion around provisions that require privacy and proxy services to forward allegations of malicious conduct to privacy and proxy service customers. And have that information flow through so that there can be action taken with respect to incidents of malicious conduct when observed by registrars, by the general public and others, and have that information, again, passed along as part of a registrar's general business model. There was a final category here which involved additional information on registrars and their affiliates. And I think we've made a lot of progress here under the 2009 version of the RAA. So here I think the focus of this comment was intended to bring some clarity around information that would facilitate the identification of individuals that might be actively complicit in allowing malicious conduct to occur. And here I think there will be a discussion on how this topic would actually be deployed. But we thought that, and you'll see this in the concept paper, that through the RAA, if there was a provision added requiring resellers, for example, to provide and maintain complete and accurate contact information for a point of contact for malicious conduct, that would go a long way towards developing a more credible approach downstream from registrars through resellers to the ultimate consumer as a way of at least assuring the consumer that malicious conduct is being addressed by resellers when complaints are either communicated to or otherwise presented to this point of contact for malicious conduct. So what I've attempted to do is just give you a very high-level overview of this document. There are other members from ICANN staff that are here who may choose to comment on the document. But we think the document is a starting point for the working group to compile this list and then to determine from that list, what action ought to be taken going forward. And ICANN staff, stands ready to help this working group in whatever way we can to address those topics and provide either information or other assistance in order to help the work of this group reach a successful conclusion, Steve.
Thank you very much for that very detailed presentation, and we'll look forward to getting your document and as soon as possible, and certainly by the November 9th deadline. I don't want to spend too much longer on this presentation because we do have a whole other sub-team of work that we need to address, but Tim, you had a question?
Yeah, not any but in those specifics on those topics, but just David, you'd mentioned that you were going to. It sounded like you were going to post this document outside of this group. I would have some concern with that, given that it may present some other expectations within the community that if I can't post this document like for public comment or something, like these things are all going to be implemented and find their way in the RAA, and we don't know that yet today. And it also gives more weight to those in that regard than it would to others who have equally, in their minds, important topics that need to be considered. So I would suggest that wherever they're coming from, they're compiled within this group and dealt with within this group, so the expectations are level across the playing field.
Yeah, that's a good point, Tim. I don't know if our intent is truly to post this document on our website. I think our intent was to develop this document for use by this group. And, I'll certainly chat with Kurt Pritz and with Doug Brent and and ask them for some, you know, some clarity and guidance around how they want this document distributed, and then I can get back to you and let you know.
Well, in general, we have a publicly archived mailing list, so I don't think this isn't going to be a top secret document, but I take your point that it should be communicated in the appropriate fashion.
If I might just clarify, it will be provided to the working group members. It will be, however, publicly archived, and I'm sure we'll take care to put it in the proper context, if that's your concern. But it's not going to be, any type of private or working group only document, I think, as Steve indicated.
Right, right. And I understand that the work the script does is open and transparent and public. But I just meant that it be posted through this group.
Absolutely.
And not as something separate. Like
absolutely.
Okay.
I think we're in violent agreement on that. Okay, before we turn to sub-team A, I just want to emphasize again that, we're looking for other suggestions from, I think it would be great to have the law enforcement suggestions, the ICANN staff suggestions. As I said, others are preparing some lists, but I certainly welcome any thoughts other people here have. I mean, the reason that we're having this meeting here is in part to solicit any other suggestions for topics that ought to be considered. So let me just open the floor to that and ask if people have other topics that they wish to list for possible inclusion in our topics list. Okay, well, I'm sorry, Alan, did you have?
I'll start off with a simple one. Clarity in definitions. The RAA defines a registered name holder as a holder of a registered name, which I don't find particularly illuminating. And there's an awful lot of things like that where terms are used without being defined at all. And it's very unhelpful for trying to interpret what clauses mean when suddenly a word pops up, registrant, for instance, which is used in a few places, never defined. Is it the same as a registered name holder? There's a slew of them like that. The other one that's my favorite one is we always talk about notifications, and yet the RAA is very specific in saying something vague about the second notification. This is on expiration. It's not clear, and it doesn't mention at all that this first or when it is or what it is.
Okay, good suggestion, and that's an example of a topic where the topic might just be all of the operative terms ought to be defined. I mean, we don't. Yeah. Pardon me?
Defined with some meaning,
yeah.
Not a circular definition.
Okay. Other suggestions for topics? Okay. Well, again, before I turn it over to Bo, let me just remind people that we are looking for any additional suggestions. So if you have some, you can send them to. If you're not on the mailing list, you can certainly get on the mailing list, and you can certainly send to Margie any suggestions that you have for other topics that ought to be considered. So thanks to our presenters, and let me turn this over to Bo.
Thank you, Steve. So this slide up here kind of goes back to my overview, in a sense, of what the working group is about. We just got through on the B part there, the RAA amendments. So for those of you who are beginning to question or wonder what the scope or the direction of the group is on the RAA amendments, they are there, and that's how we're proceeding. In Group A, which is the group I'm leading, the Registrant Rights Charter, as you can see, a subgroup of volunteers from GNSO and ALAC will draft a descriptive list of rights. However, I think we certainly want to open up people who want to volunteer to contribute to the discussion to, obviously, outside the GNSO and ALAC. We lost one of our speakers to the hour, but in the course of just moving forward here, I have a few documents I want to just pass out. I know that a long trip home for many of you, so you might weigh the suitcase down a little bit, but not too bad. So this first document I'm passing out, those of you who are on the group,
mailing list will know about it already. It is the supplier, the mainland supplier's code of practice that was put out by the Australian Domain Name Administration, which is an industry group. Now, I do not currently know of any other document that is as similar as this one is to what it is we are going to try to do with the Registrant Rights Charter. I have a few extras up here if you want to come get them at the end. So I'm not suggesting that the outer document I passed out would supplant the URL of that list up there that's been established as the starting point for the Registrant Rights Charter, but it does make some interesting comparative reading, so that's why I pass it out to you now. I have another document here that I think I have fewer copies of, but this is a set of guidelines that don't really apply in this circumstance because they're too general. They pertain to all websites, but the point of passing them out is that we've heard a couple of comments about having plain language. I think that when we're talking about creating something that's going to be used ultimately or that's going to be in the hands of consumers, we've really got to take care to use language that's going to be identifiable and usable to them. So, also, if you are on the mailing list, and it's easy enough to get on it if you're not, I put in there also the New York Taxicab Riders Bill of Rights, which may seem like a very simple document, but if you take a look at it, it's in language that can be used both by the consumer to develop a sense of expectations, but it's also, if you think about it, there are a broad range of complexities behind each of the points. So what I really wanted to do was not take a lot of time at this particular session to go through these unless anybody would like to do that. Rather, I was sort of hoping that we could take these documents home, look at them, compare them to the one that's in the URL up here, and then begin to circulate. Actually, I want to go back to the slideshow here. And then begin to circulate some ideas for what one document might be missing that the other one might want to have, along with any sort of suggestions as to other communities we might want to ask about additions to the material in the working group or in the Registrant Rights Charter. So as I said, I think Group A's task is a fair bit more simple in some ways than Group B's, but hopefully we can both collaborate with each other and learn and move forward in that way. So number three there under RIA amendments on the working group charter is kind of the same for us in Group A. We want to propose next steps or consider next steps at this point for where we want to go from here. So I'm proposing that in a couple of weeks from now that we try to reconvene at least by the mailing list to suggest some things to, you know, say what we might like about OUTA's paper versus what we think may be missing from or needs to be elaborated on in the URL there, and hopefully take the discussion forward from that so that we can develop a substantial written list. So does that sound relatively logical and easy to everybody here? I don't think it needs to be more. It doesn't sound logical and easy to you?
Logical is fine. The easy, I'm not sure about. One of my concerns with this whole concept is how do you provide a statement of rights that is simple and easy to understand when so many of the rights vary from registrar to registrar and are buried in the contracts? So there's not much you can say in a single web page which will really, with clarity, say what the rights are in many cases.
It's interesting. That came up in a variation of that came up in the previous meeting here about the disparate ways that information is displayed or registration abuse information is displayed on various registrar pages and whatnot. I don't have an easy answer to that, but I think we have to start with something. And I think there has to be something, you know, given the fact that there is a provision in the new RAA that says, you know, the registrars will link to this page. If it's created, it needs to be created. So,
I mean, I can imagine, it's not what the RAA says, but I can imagine that one could provide a simple statement where each registrar would have to fill in the hyperlinks to point to the exact verbiage in their contract, which gives you the answer to the specific question. But that isn't what was put in the RA. It said we'll point to a web page, which is not quite the same thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, I certainly think if there are issues or if there are suggestions for, you know, information architecture or something, we can certainly make those part of the discussion. I think I saw Mikhail first, and then he was okay.
How fair of the Irish. Thank you very much, Mikhail. And this brings me to my point, which is that on top of what Alan said, there's also the problem of different countries, laws, jurisdictions, and everything. And registrars are operating under many different laws. I mean, I'm in France, Mikhail's in Ireland, we've got people in America. I'm wary of the work being undertaken here if it attempts to bring all that in a blanket kind of statement. I think we should be mindful of that because we will be running into problems with that. So once, you know, just to agree with Alan, I don't think it's going to be that simple. We have to be mindful of that.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think we should be mindful of it, but take a statement as relatively simple as every registrar should post information that demonstrates their identity and physical address or a place that they can be reached. I mean, that's simple in a sense, but in fact, it's simple in most senses, but, you know, I don't think that's widely geographically variable. It's either you have identity information on your website as a registrar as to who you are.
That's already covered in the RA. That's already covered in the RA.
Well, I know it is. I'm just using that as an example. So actually, you were next, so.
I mean, echoing pretty much what Stefan is saying, and I mean, basically, I'm not too sure where Alan wants to go with this digging around for different registrant rights concept. I mean, if you can stick to basic, simple rights and responsibilities, it's also as well, it's a two-way street. I mean, we're dealing in the post-expiry thing, the post-expiry working group. There's a lot of whispers and rumors and things like that, but then when you start digging into it, a lot of this comes back to the fact that, you know, registrants don't update their contact details, so it's their responsibility to update their contact details. It works both ways, but kind of going too deep into it, you're never going to come back out.
Just going to ask, is there anybody here from Australia who has any experience with the OUDA's document? It's been around for 5 or 6 years. Did it work? Did it help? Does nobody read it? No one knows. Okay. I think Tim and then Margie.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if it's a perfect analogy. I mean, it's actually a code of practice for the registrars. It's not really the same thing as what we're talking about producing here. So it might not get, you know, anything that's real analogous as far as experience goes. But just to respond to Alan, I know, you know, that you have some concerns there, you know, such as some of the things that have come up in the post-expiry domain name working group, like the 45-day grace period. But in reality, I mean, we have to understand that that's not a registrant right. That's something that's offered to registrars to use in various ways. So that may not be something we can say, you know, with consistency, but certainly, you know, the registrant has the right to renew their domain name up to the expiration date. If the domain is deleted, there may be other certain rights. It may be a dynamic document. As things change, as policies change, as the RAA changes, then the document will need to change, obviously. And I don't think we're ever going to completely eliminate confusion. Just, you know, CCTLDs. I mean, we offer, you know, several dozen different CCTLDs that have completely different, and that this document isn't going to apply to at all. So to some extent, it's going to be difficult to you know, get rid of all confusion that registrants might have over registering a domain name. So I think we just need to do the best we can, stick with what exactly the current rights are, keep the document as simple as possible.
I think I was going to say something similar to what Tim was saying. This exercise was intended to be a description of existing rights and obligations under the current RAA. So to the extent that you have concerns about whether, you know, it applies under different international laws. We already have that situation right now because all registrars are bound by the agreement. And so theoretically, all of, you know, the rights and obligations should be consistent regardless of where you are in the, in the world. And so I don't think, at least this exercise is meant to be merely a way of clarifying those rights in simple language that everyone can understand based upon what's in the contract. And to the extent that the group gets to the point where they think there are some rights that aren't in the RAA that should be, then that's a separate topic that we had decided to address through the subpart B, which, you know, would maybe be another topic for an amendment. So that was kind of the thinking behind the work up until this point on this team.
Any other questions or do you have anything else? Then perhaps we're done for now.
Well, should we talk about scheduling, like when we want to start, just our next meetings and that sort of just logistics issues?
For Group A, we had committed to trying to come up with something 30 days after Seoul. Now, I don't know how realistic that is, but in a sense, as we've sort of hammered through the last few minutes, some of the work is already there. So, I don't know. What do you? Do you think we should continue to meet, to convene separately, Group A and Group B?
Yeah, I think we can keep. There's obviously some overlap, but also, you know, enough distinction here that it makes sense to keep these on separate tracks. On subteam B, we've set a deadline of November 9th for submission of the topics, and then we will plan to schedule a call the following week to go over what has been submitted. It may be possible for us to try to draw, because obviously there's going to be a lot of overlap and things that will be on more than one list, so we'll try to pull together something that is a more or less cleaned up unified list, and then take a look at it and see if we're missing anything, or if we need to make any changes to it, and then we can turn to our second task. But the immediate deadlines are November 9th for submission of your topics, and then we'll have a meeting the week of the 16th.
For us, for Group A, a week or so after Seoul, we'll send out a mail for perhaps convening a telephone meeting to get us headed towards the 30-day after Seoul commitment.
All right. If there's no other comments or questions, thanks to everyone, and we look forward to your contributions to this effort.
Thank you.